Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
This week on Lunchbox Envy. For 200 years, it was one of the most expensive foods on Earth.
In 1947, the future Queen Elizabeth received 500 tins of it as a wedding gift from the government of Queensland.
And when you eat it, it eats you back.
It's pineapples!
Pineapple!
Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Alex and I'm here with my fellow QI elf Manu.
Hello, Alex.
Hello, Manu, and chef and food writer Rosie McKean.
Hello, it's me, Rosie McKean. It's effing hot.
It's so hot.
It's so sweaty.
I did actually get out and enjoy some sun this weekend. I went for a nice long country walk where I stopped at a pub, had a bad roast, which is a real shame.
I mean, you know what my thoughts are on this, Alex. What I'm going to say is always bad.
But I think sometimes when they're like soft and squidgy and marinated and there's a good piece of meat, it really hits the spot. But the potatoes were underdone and hard.
That's a crime.
A real crime. Mm-hmm. The parsnips were really underdone, as in they sort of were that thing where you can't cut through them.
Not being funny, but it was what, 30 degrees
or
so?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think you're right. What did you do?
Tom and I had a date night. Mm-hmm. We do our date nights at home now that we physically can't leave the house with a child. And
I think it's because of the fame from Lunchbox.
The fame. I forgot about my fans, yeah. If you light a barbecue, do you know what I'm talking about when I say there's a little chimney you can have?
Yes. I've seen this.
You've seen this. So you put coal in the chimney, you'll light it in there, which enables it to get really hot really quickly because it's a much smaller space. Then you tip that hot coal into the base of your barbecue and you're ready.
It's the climber.
But what you can actually do is that you can just grill on the chimney, yeah. Make skewers of things, and then you just put them over this incredibly fierce heat that is coming from the chimney, and everything cooks incredibly quickly.
That's quite cool.
And it was so good. So we had chicken, and we had miso salmon and rice. It was a very, very, very good dinner, and I will be doing it again.
Pineapple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've got two lovely pineapples in front of us here. The last two that Tesco's have in stock.
Oh, well done.
Yes, I was going to say... One of them looks really old and one of them looks really unripe.
I felt it was like shopping for pumpkins on the day before Halloween.
I can't believe how beautifully green that is.
That one's really nice. Yeah. Okay, so pineapple 101.
Pineapple basics 101.
From our basics bitch.
basics bitch corner.
I suppose the first thing is it even a fruit?
It is.
Oh! Praise Jesus.
So many fruits. So this.
Every single one of these eyes is a berry, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Like strawberries.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So botanists have geniusly decided to call a pineapple a multiple fruit. So this is a multiple fruit.
Does that mean if I eat a slice of pineapple, I can say I had five of my fruit a day?
Yes, definitely. So they grow on a single kind of sprouting stem from the ground. So they don't grow on trees.
Yeah, way lower down than I thought.
Really,
they grow on the ground.
Really low.
Because they really look like they hang pendulously from trees.
I know. So they grow with a stem at the bottom and then this bit at the top. And it takes anywhere from 18 months to 3 years to grow. So it's a long fruit. Mm. And if you want to plant them, you can plant them from the seeds that are inside, or you can cut the top off and grow it from this head thingy.
Which is called the crown.
Yes, exactly. So it is a tropical plant, which grows in hot countries, loves the heat, and historians think it's probably native to Brazil or Paraguay. So it is an American, Southern American fruit. Today, the largest growers are Indonesia, Costa Rica, and the Philippines.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. They love pineapples. In the Philippines, I love this so much. It's such an important part of some kind of Filipino communities that there's a place called Aklan, and they have a tradition of making pineapple fabric, which
is called
piña.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
Is
so
it?
They strip the leaves,
okay,
and they weave them into a really fine mesh, and they embroider them, and it's like used at all of their kind of big celebrations.
Right,
it's like a UNESCO protected kind of heritage thing. It's really, really lovely.
I think the traditional like Filipino shirt, I guess, in the way that I suppose like a black tie outfit would be a traditional formal dress or something in a wedding here. Like in the Philippines, they've got this embroidered shirt that's made out of it. Yeah. It's really expensive.
Really expensive.
I guess it would. It's quite labor intensive to make a fabric out of that.
Mm-hmm.
They are so spiky, man.
They are very spiky. Have you ever accidentally stabbed yourself on one of those?
Yeah, I have many times.
It's really annoying.
It's terrible.
Under the nail is like,
oh yeah, horrible. Yeah. That's why I think it's a bit odd that it's a sex symbol as a fruit, because it's quite painful from every angle.
I mean, some people are into the spikes.
That is so true.
That is fine.
And on the growing, like, I could grow a pineapple plant from this one that I bought in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. Which
could you grow it here?
You can.
I mean,
it's
you
really
could now.
Yeah,
you
I was
going
to say
right
it's
now, yeah.
Today.
Yes. You can. If you go to one of those nice National Trust properties, you know, big stately home with a garden, and there's lots of different greenhouses and orangeries and stuff, they might also have a pinery, which is basically like a low-lying greenhouse. Mm-hmm. They look kind of like flower beds with glass structures over,
so
which are designed for growing pineapples.
But you couldn't walk in there as a standing up human.
No, I think they're probably about kind of nipple height.
I think I could probably.
Yeah,
maybe,
you are very small.
Yeah. But they open up. They're like covered flower beds. Yeah, but they're designed for growing pineapples.
Do we want to talk about the mathematics of the pineapple?
Oh, yeah, because aren't they mathematically perfect or something?
They are Fibonacci as flip.
Fibonacci!
Fibonacci sequence is basically when you add two numbers together in a sequence, and then that makes the third number, and then you add the second and the third number, and that makes the fourth number. And it's this beautiful ratio in nature that you see all of the places. If you think of kind of spiraling out shells.
Oh, it makes that special spiral.
Yes.
Oh, so like a snail shell is Fibonacci.
Exactly. And pineapples do the same thing. So they usually grow in rows of 8, 13, and 21 little small fruits. Smaller ones grow in 5, 8, and 13. And this is such a well-established fact that in 2012... there was a fan who wrote to Nickelodeon to tell them that SpongeBob's pineapple house was mathematically impossible because it's got complete symmetry. Whereas if you look at how the pineapple grows, its diagonals never match up. And she explained this so well that the illustrator of the pineapple, Kenny Pittenger, redesigned it. So now it is mathematically correct in all of the illustrations.
Oh.
For context, SpongeBob SquarePants lives in a pineapple under
the
sea.
Yes, he does.
And I actually looked up why he lives in a pineapple under the sea, because it doesn't make any sense when you think about it. And the explanation is that it's a pineapple that was dropped from a boat from one of the islands above, because obviously he lives in the tropical part of the ocean. It's detritus.
Oh, he lives in rubbish.
It's ocean rubbish.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Etymology of pineapple.
Oh, my God.
It's quite dumb, isn't it? Yeah.
It's so stupid. We are one of the only countries on the planet that don't call this fruit ananas.
Yeah. Everyone
knows ananas.
Look at this map. So I've got a map of all of the countries. They call it ananas, and it's in blue mostly. And then there are a few rogue red ones.
Because Spanish countries mostly call it piña, no?
Yes, exactly.
I think there's enough in this world to get outraged about, Manu. I think you can calm down.
This one,
like, it's
this
just,
one
it's just
gets
words.
Me. It's in the scientific name for pineapple as well. So the scientific name is Ananas commosus, which is tufted ananas, tufted pineapple.
Yeah.
And we think the ananas part comes from the indigenous Tupi, which is a Brazilian language for excellent fruit. In England, what we did is when it came over, we were like, this kind of looks like a pine cone.
Well, we used to call pine cones pineapples.
Exactly.
So, which makes sense, right? So the things that grow on pine trees, like apples, we called pineapples.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then when the pineapple came along, we just used that for pineapples instead.
Right.
And then we renamed pineapples pine cones. Very odd.
Very, very weird.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I remember seeing the word ananas when I was little on holiday on like the side of yogurts and stuff and whatever. And being like, these idiots don't know what a pineapple is. It's called a pineapple, not an ananas.
Well, again, especially because we call bananas banana.
Like, yeah.
We've really dropped the ball there. Yeah.
I love the Yoruba word. So West African word for pineapple is opanibo, which is white person's palm fruit.
Oh, I like
that. White man's fruit.
Do you know what these are called? These little segments here. Each of the little segments, like on the body of a coconut, is called an eye.
Oh.
Which actually really grosses me out now that I know about it, because now I'm thinking about sort of a horrible mutant fruit made of eyes.
Mm. And what's that thing where you can pull out the fruit?
Oh, I am so unconvinced by that.
I think maybe
yeah,
you gotta smack it
better.
But each one.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you smack it.
You smack it on the floor.
And they all fall apart.
And then they just basically come out.
Ah, is that a thing?
Yeah, that is a thing. So I remember it in COVID.
you structurally destroy it.
Yeah, you basically give it like a real whack.
Not on my nice table, though.
No,
thank you very much.
No, okay. Do you guys like pineapple?
It's too strong for me. I'll take it in as an ingredient in things. But if there's a fruit salad going, I'm all about the melon. I'm like, yum, yum, melon, melon, melon. And then every time I see a pineapple, I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. And I kind of force myself through it. But it's too much.
It's very dominant in the fruit salad.
I don't think fruit salad should be a thing at all.
Love that hot take. Yeah. Why is that?
It makes all of the fruit taste the same. And if there's an orange in there, it's over.
The mix of the juices
It's a very true, good point. It's a very good point
you
made there.
Thank you very much.
It's also just like, what's the point of a fruit salad? Like, it's not really a dessert. It's not really a starter.
It's a dessert for people who can't cook.
Yeah.
They just have to chop up fruit.
But there's plenty of commercially available desserts for people who can't cook, like Ben and Jerry's.
But on its own, I love pineapple. I think it's delicious. And I love sugar.
I like sugar too. I do like pineapple. I have to say, it's not the tropical fruit that I reach for. You know, that's definitely mango.
It is a very intense fruit.
But it is also amazing. Like my husband said, imagine if you were the first person who discovered pineapple and ate that sweet thing.
It is such a kick. It's so exciting.
It would be mad to eat.
Yeah, I mean, we are going to talk about this because everyone went absolutely crazy.
They went bananas for bananas.
Also, do you know what I found out in my research? And I was very intrigued by this because they are so ubiquitous in kind of like design. Mm-hmm. But an upside down pineapple is the swingers yes invitation.
It is.
And how did you find this out, Rosie?
I just was looking online, different things. What does pineapple mean?
Yeah, apparently, especially
I wrote, why is pineapple gay?
Wow. Wait, is it a gay thing?
If you had to give fruits sexualities, which is a different episode we should do.
Apple's very straight. Avocado's bisexual, as we've established.
Mango's also bisexual, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see it now.
Yeah. Pineapple is gay.
Especially on cruise ships, right?
Yes, exactly. Really, really big. So people hang images as well of an upside down pineapple on their door if they're like, hey, you should
come into my cabin, have
a little party. But I was trying to figure out how this happened. And it's actually linked to a really, really long history of hosting and pineapples, which we will talk about. And then there's another idea that it's to do with the fact that someone called John Parkinson, who is a botanist to Charles I, wrote about pineapples in the Garden of Eden. So he was like, maybe it was a pineapple instead of an apple. So then they became linked to like temptation and sexuality. And also, as we know, most fruits have been an aphrodisiac at one point or another.
Yeah.
So these kind of become linked to, sexuality, like fertility.
Well, isn't there also, I remember talking about it a lot at uni, but that men should eat pineapple because it makes their semen taste better.
Yes.
Is that true?
I also looked that up and it's not true.
So there's been
the money I've wasted.
This is also one of the most common questions about pineapples I found online.
Yeah.
So there's a Dr. Jeff Foster who was writing for Men's Health, and he's explaining that 80% of semen is water. And the rest of the chemicals in it are really, really specific, and they keep sperm healthy and let them move, and are really, really important in the quantities that they're in.
Okay.
So it's like crucial that eating specific foods doesn't change the chemistry of your semen, because if it did, your semen would not work very well. It's not proven, unfortunately.
Okay, all right. What? Girls, stand down.
And boys.
And boys, sorry. I apologize.
What is really nice is that it is a big fertility symbol for women who are going through IVF.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah. Because of all of the health benefits of eating just like fruit in general, and also this link to fertility and pineapples, women who are going through IVF use it as a symbol of like solidarity with other women. Oh. And lots of women go to their treatments and their injections wearing like pineapple prints and badges, and it's
that's so nice. I actually do remember now from my antenatal classes, we had a sort of whole like, what is and what isn't effective for bringing on natural labour? And because one of the things was to eat or drink a lot of pineapple.
Really?
Drink pineapple juice, eat pineapple fruit. Mm. But I think what she said is that you'd need to eat like 18 pineapples a day or something to actually get enough of the hormone that it may or may not contain to induce labour.
Also whack the woman on the floor.
Whack the woman on the floor, and then the baby falls out.
Andy and Anna here from your new favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Okay, let's crack into our first lunchbox. And this week, that is Manu.
Okay, today I have brought a designer handbag.
That's my bag.
Yes.
Rosie kindly brought in a very beautiful designer handbag.
It's Ferragamo for anyone who cares. I got it vintage shopping in Japan.
Is it made out of pineapple? Are you going to tell me this is a pineapple bag?
No, I have requested it because when pineapples were first introduced to Europe, we treated them like this. We treated them like hot designer property, and you would not have eaten them at all. For a research a while ago, I was speaking to a really lovely historian called Fran Bowman, who literally wrote the book on pineapple. So it's called The Pineapple. It was published in 2006.
It's a great title.
And it's basically going through how this fruit like took over the kind of upper echelons of society in Europe. Because it was so tasty and so expensive and so hard to grow.
And maybe because it looks so weird, right?
Yeah, no, it's really, like, this is, when I think of exotic.
Yeah, it's so exotic, is it? Yeah.
Really
yeah.
weird.
Yeah.
So Christopher Columbus, friend of the pod, first brought
really
a
friend or foe?
acquaintance
feature?
Of the pod. Yeah.
Person big, who keeps yes. cropping up.
Nobody escapes Rosie's judgmental gaze.
Definitely not Columbus.
So he brought the first pineapple back in the 1490s, in 1496.
I bet it split the bag.
Oh, I always split the bag. So annoying.
I bet he got halfway there and then the plastic went and he was like, oh.
But because it's so fussy, like it really, really likes hot climates, it's a very pernickety plant, it took more than a century for people to figure out how to grow it in Europe. So it was basically as the British and the Dutch were literally at war, physically fighting, they were also in a kind of botanical horticultural war. So they were kind of battling to grow all of these exotic fruits that they'd brought back from their colonies. And much to Britain's annoyance, the Dutch cracked it first. So it was actually a female botanist in the Netherlands called Agneta Blok who managed to grow the first pineapple in 1687. She was kind of building on other Dutch growers' developments, which included using hothouses, so those pineries we spoke about. So basically greenhouses with ovens in them, so they get extremely hot. And then they used a specific kind of bark called tanner's bark, which keeps the soil really, really warm and moist and heats the fruit gently, but it doesn't let off too much steam. Because the steam, if you've ever had a steam burn, it is the worst.
It's the worst.
So painful. And pineapples hate steam burns too. So once everyone had figured this out, pineapples start exploding all over Europe. It's really, really popular, but only amongst the richest, richest people in Europe. In 1764, there's a report in the Gentleman's Magazine, which breaks down how expensive it is to grow this fruit. So it says it takes about £150 to build a pine house, which would have been about £23,500 today.
Okay, so that's like a solid kitchen extension.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a side return.
Yeah.
If you don't live in London, it's 50k if you live in London.
Yeah, but even then, there's like no guarantee that the fruit's going to grow. So you've sunk all of this money into a pine house. It might not grow. But if it does, you can sell it for £10,000 equivalent.
Like sell the pineapple.
Yeah. So it's about £60 then. And
oh,
then
wow.
You,
that's a pretty amazing return on investment.
It's a really, really big investment.
It's like breeding, I guess, like really luxury animals. What are they called? Pedigree.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's so popular that the shape of it even becomes like this big status symbol. So if you have wandered around, like especially central London, you will see pineapples on everything.
Yeah,
so
everywhere.
On the tops of gates, on like posts, on arches.
On top of buildings a lot. St. Paul's Cathedral, I think, has some on.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. The other thing I read, it says on the top of the men's singles trophy at Wimbledon.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that an upside down one, though?
Novak, we know you. You're a dirty boy.
Yeah, they're literally there, engraved everywhere. Yeah. They're like ornamenting buildings. When you realise, it's
you
like
can't
the Matrix.
Them.
It's crazy.
It's so good. One of my favourite pubs, The Pineapple in Kentish Town. Thank you very much.
Good pub. I've been there.
You could also go to jail for stealing one because they were so expensive.
Yeah, of course,
yeah they were a hot property.
That's like stealing someone's conservatory.
Yeah. In 1807, there was a gardener called John Godding who got sent to Australia for 7 years for stealing 7 pineapples.
Oh.
Yeah.
Imagine being sent to the country where you could actually grow pineapples.
There's one factoid about pineapples that keeps circulating, which is that you could rent them. So if you couldn't afford to buy one, you could just borrow one for a bit, put it on your dinner table, invite people around and be like, look at this, and then send it back.
From the way you're phrasing this, it sounds like it's not true.
Yeah, because she said factoid.
Yeah, factoid.
I was about to tell you it, Manu.
Really?
I was about to be like, is she not going to bring up the renting
no.
thing?
Well, when I was speaking to Fran Bowman last, I was like, I can't find a source for this. And she was like, so what happened is people read her book and then got this out of it, and journalists spun it and spun it and spun it, and it's now one of the most popular factoids about pineapples.
But it's not true.
It's not true. You could gift a pineapple and then ask for the top back, which happened quite a lot.
So that you could grow it.
Yeah, sure.
But there's very little evidence people rented them.
Well, because I was going to say, I always thought that was a bit odd because they're not going to last that long.
No.
They're going to go all gross and disgusting.
You can actually rent designer handbags.
That's genius. Very clever.
You can rent everything. One of my favorite Instagram things is that you can pay to spend 45 minutes on a private jet that's parked, or even just a segment of a private jet.
Just to take photos
and make it look like you fly private jets everywhere.
Well, that
holding
one,
a pineapple.
It's funny you say that because that's kind of what pineapples were doing, right?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Like, no, exactly.
Status, class, wealth. Mm-hmm. It was all about that in the 18th century, at least.
There's quite a famous painting of Charles II receiving a pineapple. Not by that. I mean, like, sorry. given a pineapple into his hand by a gardener. And I've got a picture of it here. The gardener is kind of down on one knee, so proposing to him with a pineapple.
Really nice.
Yeah, because the association of just this being like, it's like a jewel, I guess.
Yeah. It's called King Fruit or Queen of the Fruits.
And it's crowned as well. Like, it makes sense. And when you look at it, in those days, when there was so little to see, it's like an alien. Mm-hmm. Like it is such an exciting looking fruit.
It's very,
and then it's so exciting to eat and taste. It's so out there.
I just am thinking about all of these people who would have had it on their tables like this and never tried one in their lives.
Yeah,
because you often just let them rot.
Apparently
very smelly. So this pineapple craze ended by the mid-Victorian era as steamships became more common and food canning became more common.
Mm.
Basically, pineapple became way, way, way more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as that happens, rich people hate stuff. Like, they don't want stuff that you can get everywhere.
No. Why would they?
I know. So they turned to celery instead. That was the next big
That's such a downgrade.
Celery.
That is so rich trend to be like, this is objectively rubbish, but it's rare, so I'm going to go for it.
That was the big pineapple craze. I think one of my favourite things is there was a monarch, William IV, who was alive during this time, so 1830 to 1837 he ruled. One of the things that historians remember him for is looking like a pineapple.
He looked like a pineapple.
That is savage.
He's got such a wide bottom jaw and then such a small forehead and a little like at the top.
That's so funny.
It's very cute.
Yeah, I mean, long association with royals. The late queen was gifted for her wedding present. In the intro, we said 500. I couldn't work out whether it was 500 tins or 500 cases, which could be way more than 500.
It's like when someone gifted Queen Victoria, like, the biggest cheese in the history of cheeses. What do they expect people to do?
To be fair, tin pineapple, it's going to keep. That's like, basically, here's your lifetime supply of pineapple. If everyone gave you a lifetime supply of non-perishables, like, that would be great.
What would you want?
Oh my God, great question.
Yeah.
I think I'd go tin tomatoes.
Really?
Tin tomatoes would be a great
if it has
shout.
To be in a
yeah.
tin.
Yeah, in a tin. I think fish. Tin fish.
Yeah, tin fish is good.
Also, it kind of turns your wedding into a harvest festival.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't want this for my wedding, to be clear. I'd want it for, like, the apocalypse.
Okay, it's time for our second lunchbox, and that is mine. And I have brought you torpedo juice. Which is a World War II era improvised cocktail.
Wow. Ooh. Oh, it is delicious. Mm. What's in there?
This is pineapple and rum. I've actually made a much nicer version of the cocktail I'm about to talk about, because making the original was probably impossible at this stage and also would make you very unwell. Let me take you back to World War II in the South Pacific on US Navy submarines. Mm-hmm. Okay, try and picture the scene.
I'm picturing it. Have you seen the musical South Pacific?
Yeah, no, I haven't actually.
Neither have I.
you're in a submarine. You're in a big group of men. Mm. It's hot. It's sweaty.
Yeah. It's like being on the Northern Line.
Exactly.
Oh my God! Yes.
You're having a terrible time. It's no picnic, by all accounts. And you're pretty desperate for a drink. You're not allowed to drink because you're a soldier or you're a marine. Okay. But there is some alcohol aboard this submarine, and it is inside the torpedo fuel tanks. There was
No stupid questions.
Yeah,
torpedo is a bomb, right?
Yeah, it's basically a missile that was shot under the water. The idea is that it shoots through the water, hits the boat, and explodes. Got or it. Explodes near the boat or whatever.
So it
whatever,
needs,
depending
it
on how
needs
it's designed.
That power to, like, it's not like you're slingshotting it out. It's got to, like,
no,
travel.
It's like a ballistic missile, and like it actually, like, it's like a rocket that goes from A to B and then explodes at the end.
Water rocket.
So this was the Mark 14 torpedo specifically. There are other versions, the Mark 15, the Mark 13, they were used in same kind of thing, but other places like aircraft carriers and stuff. And they're actually notoriously unreliable. Early on in the war, they went far too deep into the water. Their exploder mechanism often didn't work. Magnetic detonators were kind of useless. But the other problem they had was the fuel that they used was a mix that included high proof grain ethanol, which sailors would routinely siphon out of the fuel tanks and turn into a cocktail.
Well, it was they do say absolutely savage. The South Pacific, World War shit that went down there. Some of the worst stuff you've ever seen. They needed it.
The Navy obviously weren't that happy that this was going on, because you've got drunk sailors and then a load of torpedoes that have no fuel in them. So they would try and denature the fuel and add croton oil. This horrible laxative. It made you really sick. Like, it was a laxative, it was an irritant.
And the tequila sunrise was born.
But it was, they were basically at war with their own soldiers over trying to stop this from going on. And torpedo juice is now kind of a more loose term for any military alcohol that's been repurposed for recreational purposes. Yeah.
Like in other bits of the military.
I think probably not to that extreme extent. I mean, there's alcohol everywhere, right? In cleaning substances and things like that. But anyway, so that's the torpedo juice cocktail. It's
delicious.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And exactly what I need on this hot day.
But I want to talk a bit more about some of the science behind pineapples and pineapple juice.
Okay.
I was looking up some of the kind of more commonly held beliefs about pineapples.
The first thing I think of when I think about pineapple
is
it eats you back. Like, this is digesting you as you are digesting
it. Yeah, the enzymes in the pineapple. Yeah. I read that a lot.
Is that true?
It's kind of true, yeah. So fresh pineapple contains a chemical called bromelain.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
It's been on the pod several times.
It has. We talked about it with tenderizing meats, right?
Oh. Yeah, well, and inhibiting things. Ooh. I will get to it later.
But I mean, actually, that is exactly the principle behind when you eat pineapple or drink pineapple juice, this bromelain, which is a protein digesting enzyme, does start eating and breaking down some of your proteins inside, you know, the lining of your mouth.
Is that why Rosie gets the mouth tingle?
Exactly. That is the mouth tingle. Kind of digesting you as you digest it. Mm. Only a really tiny amount, like this is like the outer layer of the inside of your mouth, which is always being kind of like chipped away and rebuilding itself and stuff, so it's not a big deal.
I'm thinking, like, if you used enough pineapple, could you use it as like a torture of like you lie naked in a bed of diced pineapple until you are fermented alive? Like,
I literally have, could you just use it to dispose of a body as one of the FAQs? And the answer is no, it's far too weak to dissolve a body. I don't know, actually, maybe it would hurt.
It would probably irritate.
I think it's an irritant. I think many other more efficient ways to torture people and hurt them, because
it's an expensive way
to buy a bar full of pineapple
juice. Also, I will say, not what torture is about. You're not going for efficiency, you're going for weird and slow and painful. Yeah. I think this might be the perfect torture method.
Yeah, sorry guys. If they had eczema, it would be terrible.
Yes. I read about pineapple dermatosis, which is a very similar thing. So there's a paper published in the 1950s, which was talking about people working in pineapple factories in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a mechanized process then. So basically, when you were cutting the pineapple, you'd hold it in one hand and then you'd have a big knife and you'd be like peeling. I don't know if you've seen people peel pineapples at stores.
It's
really
pretty lethal.
It's really dangerous. But the hand they were holding the pineapple in, the skin would often go really raw and cracked, and it would get a bit dissolved by this enzyme. So very, very slowly can kind of eat through your skin.
Wow. Yeah. Not what you want.
But there's also, I think we talked about this on QI years ago. Uh-huh. There's a assertion that like people who work with pineapples a lot can lose their fingerprints because it eats through and destroys your fingerprints.
No way.
And they're kind of, you know, like, oh, it's quite good if you're a criminal. You want to just like rub your fingers on pineapple and it'll get rid of all your fingers and stuff.
It's always men being like, I want to eat more pineapple. What other excuse can I come up with that makes my jizz taste good? Gets rid of my fingerprints so I can commit crime.
But it's not true. We actually said it on QI and it wasn't right. It might temporarily dull the fingerprints and kind of get rid of it. Like you say, because it's kind of like irritating your skin. But like, they will come back. Mm. And so like, I think it's an irritant rather than a literally dissolves your fingerprints. Yeah. It's a myth.
I was going to say, Rosie, do you ever have the thing when if you're working with food a lot and knives and heat, that your fingerprints go a little bit funny? Because Emmy, my partner who's a chef, he has this all the time where he can't like use his fingerprint stuff on his phone.
I don't think I'm doing enough high heat cooking as much as Emmy is, truthfully. I can imagine that, like, because you're doing a lot of like just real like high heat stuff, he probably has like low level burns there all the time.
Right.
Whereas I'm not doing it as enough. I just don't think I'm in the hard graft anymore.
Emmy
very much is.
And also, like, Rosie's an influencer on her phone, so her phone's never locked. She's always on it. Like, she's never.
If anything, my phone is too familiar with my fingerprint.
The last thing I read, a commonly asked question: can a fresh pineapple skin withstand temperatures of 1,000 degrees Celsius?
I've heard this. It's
not true. It's obviously not true.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like super fire resistant. Like, I watched a bit.
If that were true, NASA would be using it like to coat their rockets.
According to who?
It's like a big thing. A lot of teenage boys on the internet are like,
here it is again.
We're going to make a suit of armor out of pineapple. And like, one kid does it and he's like covered in pineapple skin and he's getting his friends to like blowtorch him. He kind of catches on fire at parts. But it kind of works because it's so wet. Like, it's very wet.
I mean, yeah, but then
it's sugar it's, on it.
And it's also going to irritate your skin. So this suit of armor is probably you doing you damage before it's even protected.
That's the torture. Yeah. Suit of armor made out of pineapple skin.
Yeah.
Persistent blow torching.
It would smell good, I think.
You'd be like, really it would literally be like making tacos al pastor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did find something on scientifically mutated types of pineapple.
Ooh.
The pink glow pineapple.
Mm.
It's a very aesthetically pleasing pineapple. The flesh is pink. the scientists found a way to alter the kind of the way that the pigment is metabolized so that it doesn't break down and turn yellow. So you can buy them. They're like a kind of expensive curiosity, a bit like a square melon type thing.
Yeah. Or like the rose apples. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's really beautiful.
But they always sell them with the crowns chopped off. Partly so that they say it so that they can use them to grow more. Mm-hmm. But it also has the handy side effect of meaning that you can't grow them at home. Because it's a protected copyrighted thing. Yeah.
Is it evil? Also, you'd be able to package that.
Yes, they're much easier to package that way as well, you're right. But they're just not as fun. Like the whole point of buying a pineapple is that you get like the look of it when it arrives.
Have
it
you guys funky. I think we've brought them up before in a berry episode, but I remember you asking me, have you had a pine berry? And I was like, yes, I have. They taste exactly like pineapples. Aww. It's really weird.
I would love to try.
Andy and Anna here from your new favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Okay, it's time for our third and final lunchbox, and that is from Rosie.
I decided to throw it right back to one of the most iconic pairings of the mid-90s, 80s, 70s and 60s.
Your favourite era, the 70s.
This is cheese and pineapple on a stick.
Oh,
did you have this at your parties?
Yeah.
Can I offer you some cheese and pineapple on a stick?
Oh, thank you so much.
It's cheddar cheese, mature, great, of lovely. Course.
Ooh. What a pairing. Just make to describe, little. It's a square chunk of cheese and a chunk of pineapple skewered on a cocktail stick, and they're all just arranged on a plate, like little forests of food.
Yeah, and actually, one of my favourite arrangements for this that I saw researching specifically 70s dinner parties, which, as you know, is one of my all-time favourite dinner party eras and has
also
a brilliant Instagram.
The best Instagram.
The best Instagram. Is actually to use the body of the pineapple and skewer your cheese and pineapple over it and then make the head look like a hedgehog.
It's like the meat hedgehog.
Yeah,
basically pineapples can
so
be
much on this show.
And food hedgehogs are a thing. Mm-hmm. But pineapples are obviously like particularly sculptural and brilliant in most sort of like weird food arrangements. Mm-hmm. But yeah, cheese and pineapple, this was at every kid's birthday party I went to from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm. I say a little bit posh for kids' birthday parties. I always thought it was for adults' cocktail parties.
Mm. Well, that just says a lot about your childhood versus mine.
Yeah.
As we all know, sweet and savoury, a perfect combination. Yeah. We love a bit of sweet and savoury. Salted caramel, sweet and savoury. Mm-hmm. Chutneys and cheese. And this is the ultimate one, cheese and pineapple. And actually, did you know that cheese and pineapple are good together scientifically?
Ooh.
No.
As well.
This is some great cocktail party chat.
I love it.
Yeah. This is what that I would used to say at like speed dating. Because friend of the pod, Bromelain.
Yeah.
Bromelain needs like a star in the Lunchbox MV Walk of Fame. It's been just so much. It's actually widely used in the cheese industry as a plant-based coagulant. So it's used specifically in plant-based cheeses to make vegan cheese, to curdle things like chickpea, quote-unquote milk. But also
it's like thicken it up and make it go solid.
Yeah, because it is a coagulant. It can curdle actual milk as well. So it makes a good substitute for rennet if you're making like a vegetarian cheese even. You could potentially use bromelain.
Smart.
And it's also good for making cheeses meltable. Like if you're chemically engineering a cheese, right, rather than just, you know, doing the whole pulling and pushing, giving you a soft cheese that will stretch.
Right.
The other thing about bromelain, which I have actually mentioned before, I think, in the mango episode, is that it also inhibits or breaks down gelatins. So as is per usual when I have a story to tell, it's because I made a mistake in a recipe, and I was developing a recipe for a pineapple mousse, And I knew it would already be a problem because of pineapple breaking down dairy proteins.
Yeah.
But I was like, no bother. I'll put some gelatin in it. Uh-huh. I'll just whack a leaf of gelatin in. As it turns out, it also breaks down gelatin.
Oh, wow.
If it's raw. So basically, pineapple raw, bromelain raw in its natural temperature will of course break down proteins including gelatin.
So it's hard to cook with because it will just eat whatever you put it with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, unless you basically have to denature the protein in some way, so you have to heat treat it. So the reason why tinned pineapple wouldn't do this is because in the pasteurization process of tinned pineapple it has been highly heat treated and therefore the bromelain is done. This is a bit of a problem, right, for bakers, because obviously things like pineapple jelly, pineapple mousse are delicious, but you just cannot make them with fresh pineapple. And the best flavor from pineapple, let's be honest, is when it is very, very fresh and, perfect. It's not to say that tinned pineapple doesn't taste good. It just tastes different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Or cooked pineapple. I do love a pineapple upside down cake, though, I must say.
Oof. The dessert of swingers.
Well, to inhibit bromelain, to inactivate it, you need to heat it to about 70 degrees Celsius. So you don't need to boil it. Mm. You do just need to gently heat it. And in fact, probably the best way to do it, if you really want to be gentle and keep as much of the appeal of a piece of pineapple, is to steam it.
Oh.
So a bit faffy, but if you steam the pineapple very gently, it will inhibit the bromelain and then you can use it in whichever way you want to.
Mm-hmm. Is this just skin on whole pineapple?
No, it would be already cut. Or you can make a pineapple compote. You know, you could break it down to something that's more like sauce texture to use in whichever fruit dessert you want to do, which is what I ended up doing for my mousse, to be clear. So it's kind of a tricksy one because it's lovely to cook with, but it's actually not that easy to cook with because it's a naughty boy. Mm-hmm. but very, very good with cheese. And then I suppose also worth saying that because of this fabulous enzyme bromelain, as Alex rightly pointed out, pineapple is great for meat marination, breaking down the tough proteins, and it's used a lot in Mexican and Latin American cooking
to really soften those meats up.
Yeah, and also to go with it as because it's so acidic but so sweet, it goes so well with fatty meats like pork and goat and stuff like that. So on your next barbecue, if you're going to do a pork belly or pork ribs or anything like that, dice up some pineapple, just chuck it alongside. You won't regret it. Even with sausages, actually, it's a really good combination. Good. Before we get onto the final thing I wanted to briefly talk about, I just wanted to say, from a food styling perspective, that pineapple is one of my favourite foods to work with.
Oh.
Not because I like touching it and getting a rash and, hurting my mouth and stuff, but because it is just so beautiful. It's the most amazing looking thing. And if I am dressing a set with food for a party, you better believe there's going to be pineapple there.
Of course. And, it's literally a set piece. It comes
equally in historical sense. I would always put pineapple in a retro scene, for example, if I'm thinking about those kinds of things, because it is the ultimate dinner party.
It's showy, it's
mad
fun.
Thing to have. I actually had a look into, do you remember before COVID, around 2016, 2017, pineapple and kind of exotica really took off as an interiors thing? Do you remember that a bit? Suddenly everything was
pineapple designs.
Palms and pineapples and flamingos. And it was this huge,
that's the 70s throwback, but in a kind of slightly classier way. It's sort of plainer and...
Well, it was a bit of 70s throwback. It's a lot about accessibility of what people perceive to be good interiors that are also renter friendly, because you don't want to spend loads of money on your house doing it up when you are going to leave in 6 months when your tenancy ends. Whereas if you buy a gold pineapple from Oliver Bonus and stick that on your gold bar card.
Oliver Bonus. Oliver Bonus,
home of the gold pineapple. And also I wanted to understand where did pineapple in modern interior iconography come from? And it is that post-war tiki craze that happened, an obsession with the escapism of the South Pacific, which is bizarre, really, considering there was so much horrendous war there.
It was the opening of the world, and you could go there for the first time and be everyday person engaged with these faraway places, and they weren't scary and exotic, they were really exciting.
Like the pina colada and the Mai Tai were popularized, and all of that it's in Mad Men. You know, if you've ever watched Mad Men the whole way through, like, they're just obsessed with that vibe of, like, bamboo and pineapple and everything. And that is, it's always cyclical, and that's what happened in 2017. The other thing in 2017 was emojis. Emojis became a thing, like, in the mid-2015s, and that suddenly started to be, like, a thing you wanted outside of your phone.
Ah.
So,
Flamingo.
Oh, I see.
Like, so pineapples are all iconography that were on emojis, and suddenly it was like, oh, I want, like, that poo, you know? You could buy the poo.
Oh, my God, that's so true.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was a really weird thing.
So odd, Just to, like, pineapple on art. In 2017, there were two students at Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen who bought a pineapple from a supermarket and walked into an art exhibition in Aberdeen and just put the pineapple kind of, like, in a room. And it was there for 4 days because people thought it was part of the exhibition.
I loved it so much.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. They're just so, like, aesthetically pleasing.
Mm. Maybe it says more about art, because I feel like somebody once dropped a pair of glasses in an art gallery and it got turned into an art.
Yeah, people love people are idiots.
The big question I need to ask you is, let's get a temperature take on Hawaiian pizzas.
Oh my God, I knew that. No, I'm not. I'm shutting this down.
I'm not going to. My problem, actually. I'm normally the snob.
I'm no snob at all about it. It's just the discourse. It's the classic. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, culture war. And it's like, no.
No, but I don't think it's a culture war, right? Like, I think it's more of a question of, people don't like Americanized things. Mm. They think that this was an American invention. It wasn't. It was Canadian. Mm. But they are against the salty sweet stuff because that is seen as the kitschy, I can't taste anything unless it's, like, incredibly strong.
Do you think that's where it comes from? Because I kind of just thought it didn't really even have any meaning behind it. It just sort of accidentally become this very harmless debate.
Well, I think it was basically sort of, you know, a rejection of the Americanization of European culture.
Right.
A little bit. Specifically in the case of pizza, initially from Italians.
Yeah.
But then broader people. Yeah. You know, there is an argument to say that it's not the best combo because tomatoes and pineapple are both really acidic. Mm-hmm. So, like, it is quite a sort of overpowering thing. But then the cheese, also acidic. Mm-hmm. Cheese and pineapple are good together.
Yeah. And I would say that whilst the pineapple on pizza debate rages on and gets lots of airtime. Mm-hmm. People like me, who legitimately just prefer a plain margarita and don't like anything on their pizza, are stigmatized daily and mocked and dismissed, declared as plain or unadventurous. And it's actually legit to like a margarita pizza. And I think that's just the front we should be fighting on. Is that margarita pizza is fine.
No one is saying it's not legit to like.
Everyone says that. Anytime you order a margarita, somebody will go, oh, do you don't like other pizzas then? Like, they'll always make a thing about it. Their eyebrows, or they'll judge you.
I think we said this in the pizza episode, but I like ordering a margarita as a benchmark.
Yeah, it's like absolutely. The plain croissant.
You got to have it. You got
to
try it.
But a lot of people do. They're like, really, margarita? You're coming to a pizzeria and you're just having margarita?
Well, if it makes you feel better, there are now two incredibly well-renowned pizzerias in Naples that do Hawaiian pizzas.
Oh.
In their sort of Italian way, they've had a spin on it. So one of them, which is by the chef Franco Pepe, he has a Hawaiian pizza where the pineapple is fresh and raw and is wrapped in parma ham and then placed on the pizza post-cooking, which I think is actually a really good idea.
Yeah.
That does sound very, very good. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is a pizza bianca at Sorbillo.
Ooh.
And so as in no tomato, because obviously the Italians take big issue with the combination of pineapple and tomato more than anything else. It's basically dehydrated sort of caramelized pineapple and a bit of fresh pineapple cooked on a three cheese pizza. And the cheeses have been very, like, carefully chosen to be sort of like a perfect combo.
But that's great. That's putting the cheese and pineapple combo right at the front and center.
That sounds good.
Okay, that's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox Envy Pod.
And you can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, questions, or suggestions for future topics by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Yay! I can't wait to see you next week.
That torpedo juice has really gone to your head. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox Envy was hosted by Manu Omrio, Rosie McKean, and produced by me, Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.
Andy and Anna here from your new favourite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.